podcast. Killer Keller, official.com.
THTC, the UK's leading ethical streetwear label. Organically grown and ethically built garments from hemp, organic cotton, and other sustainable materials. 2019 is their 20th anniversary year. Join me with THTC as a Killer Keller podcast sponsor celebrating music, social activism, hemp, and street culture. THTC, eco-fashion redefined since 1999.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
We're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, 1, 2, 1, 2, yeah. Love it when a plan comes together. It's Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London. Share, subscribe, tell a friend to tell a friend. Don't be strangers, you know. You know who you are. Well, big shout out to the regulars. Big shout out to Graffiti Kings inside the place as well. And yay, we have a legacy holder in the house and a good mate at that. He's always strong, always solid, always a good chat. Barry Ashworth, Doc Pistols. Mate? How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well. It's good to be back in my old hunting ground.
Hunting ground. I love it. Yeah. That's right. So, in an undisclosed location, we might add. Yes, you have had a few haunts here.
Yeah, I lived. I used to have a place down in Ilbert Street when I first moved around here for about 10 years, and I was in Holsden for another 10 years. So yeah, very well versed. I've thrown many pubs in, many parties in all the local boozers around here. We used to do one at the Mason's Arms during Carnival. Always do a party
it's
there.
A good spot there as well.
I mean, used to be so many people used to hang out here. I mean, the Stanton Warriors were here. Ed from the Chemical Brothers here. Justin Robinson was here. Freestylers were here, Matt and Aston. It just seemed like everyone was around at the time.
Yeah. It feels and of course there are the same reprobates that are around now.
Bushwhacker, Richard Norris. Everyone was around. It felt like certainly the whole of the break scene was sort of felt like it was here. Touche from the Wise Guys was hanging around. Yeah, it was a big family at the time.
That's so sick. Well, so you used to just roam around different pubs and
different pubs. Yeah, I mean, you'd sort of move, pubs come in and out of flavour, but the Paradise was always a good haunt. Chamberlain was a great one. The one that used to be called the Crickets just down the road, that was a good place. There was loads of great boozers here.
Yeah. I mean, this is very much the order of the day, this conversation that we were even just approaching. It just feels
Do you remember
so
when you used to be able to go to the pub?
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember? You used to go to a bar and they pour you a drink out of a pump.
Yeah. exactly that. I mean, I spent, was it 362 days in a year?
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I had two days in out of the whole 360. The rest was out. So.
Yeah. Those were the days, right?
Yeah, man. It was 24 hours a day.
I mean, the cynicism is here. I mean, I think, in this day and age right now, the way, and I say day and age, man, because, we're an evergreen show, but the facts are that when we come out of this situation we're in, 2020, what's the date today?
I mean, October.
Do you know what I mean? The world is a lot different and it's only going to get a lot more different. It's a crazy time to be in the entertainment and,
I think it's probably one of the worst times ever for our industry. And I don't just mean being an artist. I mean for crews, for venues, for everybody. I mean, the government really haven't done enough to support the industry, the festivals. I mean, I was over in... it's just been a weird year. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's been a weird
super
year.
Weird,
and obviously the pandemic's been front, left, right and centre for that. But, I mean, I was over in Panama at Tribal Gathering, in the middle of a jungle, surrounded by naked people on acid.
Where's the flight?
Exactly. And then the military turned up and said, right, we're stopping the... they turned off the music, said we're stopping the festival. COVID. And I was like... COVID was sort of happening, but didn't really expect it to take hold.
That's mad.
And the promoter turned around to me and said, like, don't worry about it. They're just here to, get their whatever, and with the music, we'll be back on, and we'll be off again. This is a two-week festival. It goes on for 2 weeks. They're doing an indigenous part. It goes on for a month, actually. They do an indigenous thing for the people from all over the country. All different tribes come in, and they have, do that. It's amazing. Absolutely incredible. Stunning location. So the promoter said this will continue, and I kind of got an idea that something wasn't right. And I remember I literally went... And I got a taxi from the middle of the jungle straight to the airport and got the last plane out.
I mean, fuck this.
Yeah, I just something didn't feel right to me, and I was like, but never did I expect a year like this.
Just a complete U-turn of everything we'd ever built.
I mean, before Panama, I was in New Zealand at a great festival called Splore. So the year started perfectly. Yeah. And then I had so many shows because we had the new album coming out, penciled for September. So yeah. I had a whole string of UK, European and festival tours lined up.
Big up Serena, by the way. Big shout out to Serena, of course.
Big up Serena. Yes. And that was going to end in September when we put on our Mucky Weekender festival.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I got back from Panama, and I was lucky because I got the last flight, and other people would literally just come home a month ago because they couldn't get out of the country. So I was just like, I didn't want to.
You want to be that guy.
I didn't want to be that guy. So I literally, like I said, and then got back and, I think I've done two shows this year. I've got one in about 3 weeks ago at the Norfolk Racing Ground or Showground. Mm. And that was incredible. I mean, it showed that you could actually put social distancing events on. The production was fantastic. Yeah. The social distancing was people who were all at tables. Yes, it was a bit strange in that, the audience was further back, but they didn't have to sit down. They were just out to be in their pods around the table when they could stand up and dance. Yeah, and believe me, you didn't realise until you got on stage how much you really, really missed it.
Yeah, I bet.
And I was like, well, and they'd been doing this for 2 months. And I just thought, well, why hasn't every city, every town that's got a area just put up a stage? Because obviously the cost comes into when the production, taking up and down stages and moving around, it's expensive. But if you just put it up there, set it up for 2 months, do 3-4 shows a week, and they can be, different, you can have different shows at different times in the day, then it can make it economically viable. Do you know what I mean? Financially viable.
I'm with you. All those little small precincts and community spaces,
certainly. And if you want, if you want to go bigger, like your Wandsworth Commons, your Hyde Parks, your Clapham Common, Victoria Park. There's loads of different places because of the size you need, because of the social distancing thing. Do you know what I mean? But it wouldn't have made an effect. You could have still made it financially viable. And it was like, why isn't this being played out?
Yeah, I'd imagine like Dub Pistols would be a wicked candidate for like the battle of the band style, middle of town centre, get a party going. You know what I mean?
It's always a battle of the bands.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, you could do like a mini tour of smaller towns.
Really sad because just before it dropped down to 6 people a table, we'd just literally signed up that day. This was a couple of weeks ago, and trying to work out what we're going to do for the rest of the year and to tour the album. And we'd just done a deal with sort of the Academy groups and the bigger venues to do a socially distanced tour, again was viable with 8 people around the table. The minute they dropped it to 6, it just became financially unviable and the tour was off again. So it's like, every time you try and do something, it just feels like someone's pulling the rug from underneath your feet.
Yeah, and you're constantly fighting against that, the resistance of like them genuinely not giving too many shits. That's the other thing.
No, I mean, we was talking about it before we went live, and I think the government's handling this has been pretty shonky, to say the least. Mm. There are loads of groups, the We Are Viable, We Make Events, Let the Music Play. Mm. There's lots of different groups that are making a song and dance about it, but it really does need, a concerted effort and support from everybody out there, because otherwise there's not going to be any live music left. No. Do you know what I mean? It's not just the musicians. It's like we're talking about the actual venues. They're being shut down at an alarming rate because they can't open. Mm. All the support crews, the techs, the engineers, the bar staff, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And, if people don't come together soon, all these places are going to be gone forever.
That's right.
And it's our culture, It's like what makes the UK great is our arts and events industry.
That's right. Was it the fifth biggest economy?
Yeah, it's a £6 billion industry, and it's the fifth biggest contributor to the UK economy. And it's just been like, and now the government have turned around and said that we're not viable. Well, all these clubs and all these venues and all these festivals would all be full. It's not just the theatres and the sports stadiums and everything would all be full. If they were allowed to go ahead. Now, obviously, there's a pandemic. No one's disputing that. But they are viable businesses under any normal right. times. Do you know what I mean? And there will be a time when, hopefully, when things return to normal. But if these industries, if these places aren't supported now, then they're not going to be there.
No. Well, there's professional people that have been schooled and have grafted for their, you know, their stripes. They know they have work experience. They've got this. This is their industry. It's hard to quantify, isn't it? Because you don't have it. You don't get a certificate at the end of the journey. But it is a job that you have to build set skills for.
You know, it is a massive, massive industry. And like I said, when the government wanted to showcase the best of Britain. Like the opening ceremony of the Olympics, they turned to the arts events industry,
exactly.
and which was a fantastic, you know, spectacle to showcase to the world.
Amazing.
You know, and that's every, you know, and again, when the world wanted feeding, like Live Aid and that, it was all, so many people stepped forward and stepped up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
for free.
Do you know what I mean? And always when there's a disaster or there's something, the events industry would be the first there. And all the crews are doing it for nothing. Everybody's doing it for nothing. But now, right at this moment in time, those people need supporting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the government isn't supporting them.
That's a really, really good point. And, I think it just mirrors everyone's feelings on this show, that's for sure. The other comment we were talking about beforehand is I also feel at the same time, and I tread carefully when saying it, I do feel there has been a small level of complacency with the lineups of festivals over the years as it's kind of wound in. I mean, you're a great example of somebody that's resourceful and, oh, fuck it. If I ain't being taken seriously in this festival, I'll make my own festival. You know what I mean? It's like you've always been instrumental in those kind of causes. So you know, there has been a lot of the same names on the same billings all the time. And, yeah, there is a hierarchy that's included in that, right?
I guess, well, I think that's down to agents and promoters, really, that need to sort that one out. I think the thing here is that, you know, regardless of who's on the bill, and I get your point absolutely, is that all these businesses are being deemed unviable and they would normally sell out. Do you know what I mean? And it's like I said, it's not just the artists. It's all the crews, all the production staff, everybody who'd work at those festivals. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand quite what's going on. Mm. I do not understand what's going on. But complacency in bookings, there's loads of different kinds of festivals. You've got your mainstream festivals that will always book the same artist, do you know what I mean, and et cetera. And then you've got like your Bearded Furies, your Boomtowns, to say, perhaps, your Beat Herders, which do step out, but they're the ones that have like my festival, Shindig as well.
Yeah.
Only 5% of the people asked for a refund. Most people rolled over, and it's the same for all those festivals because most festivals shouldn't be about the lineup per se. Do you know
it's
what
experience.
I mean? It's the event. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know that you're going to go to Beat Herder, you're going to have a quality time. You know if you're going to go to Mucky Weekender, you're going to have a great time. Boomtown, regardless of who's on the bill. So they have hardcore followings, Bearded Fury, Beautiful Days. They all have a hardcore following that regardless of who's playing,
and
people
like
are going to go.
Because I like the fact that they're a different kind of audience.
They're not your corporate ones.
Exactly.
They're not your corporate ones. You know, places like Beat Herder and others won't take any sponsorship. They just don't want it involved. Do you know what I mean? It's like they want to keep it independent.
Yeah.
And that's what an independent festival is. I mean, you see these awards and it's like, that's not an independent festival. I know.
Yeah. Totally.
It's part of a group.
Cheeky, isn't it? Cheeky.
Yeah.
Like you say, I think the world is about to be in the grip of something and the whole industry is going to change whether we like it or not.
It has changed.
It's changed already. Yeah.
It's changed. You know, but it's also not just about that. It's about people can't go out. It's about their mental health.
Yeah, that's right.
The effect this is having on, you know, loads of my artist friends that I'm speaking to, I know they're struggling mentally. They're performers. They like to perform.
Yeah.
And other people, I think anybody who's in, you know, who's been in isolation or, you know, during lockdown, you're going to struggle. There's going to be times when your mind wanders. Yeah. I know mine has.
Yeah.
You know, so
you've got a studio in your house. You're not being as creative as you would be impulsively and with your band and, you know.
And there's only so much you can write. So, I mean, I've been lucky enough that I've actually, most of my attention during lockdown has been in doing charity work. You know, whether it's raising money for Tonic Music for Mental Health, which I'm patron of. And got the Flying Circus this week for that. Or I've been raising money for the Black Rhinos, the last sort of, you know, population of live, you know, Black Rhinos in the...
Give me some of that. That's fucking sick.
So that's
sick.
All I've been doing is just doing... But it's helped me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because helping other people is makes you feel good about yourself. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of been my focus, you know, and because I'm not a trained, you know, mental health person, but you know, I can help fund the people that are to make sure that people do get the help they need. And it's, you know, like I said, it's the thing that saved me.
Here's my theory.
Yeah.
Because there ain't many of you about, right, that there's very few characters that... You know, come into a world, like you really walk it how you talk it. And it's funny because you've got the persona that pulls that through. So when it comes to like a charity job, it's almost like, cool Barry. It's like, I feel like you're one of the few people that, as a personality there, you know, you're a pundit in your own right, as well as a musical artist. Do you know what I'm saying?
Thank you very much. I mean, it's a lovely thing for you to say. I think you just know full well, you've been in this industry and we've been around long enough to see people who have suffered from mental health issues or who struggle, you know, the lifestyle, the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, the late nights, the travelling, the critique, do you know what I mean? Which can be good or bad, do you know what I mean? And self-critique as well. So, you know, apart from going up and down myself, I've seen, you know, people really struggle with mental health issues. And I've seen, you know, another person that we got involved in the Flying Circus, sorry to go on about it.
No, but your podcast, brother. Your podcast. Go ahead.
Where I've moved out to the countryside, my wife is really into horses, so... her horse died recently and I got her in, I spoke to some people at the local racing yard, Claire Hobson Racing, and she's in there working. But part of that process was meeting the guys and we've become friends and we was going down the pub and we was talking about, you know, what I was doing with Tonic Music for Mental Health and the Wing Walk. And they said that they would like to get involved because one of the jockeys there had lost three friends this week. Not this week, this year, to suicide. And apparently it's a massive problem in the racing industry. One, because of the... It's the same thing, the highs, the lows, the jockeys have to keep their weight down, do you know what I mean? It's God, like all sorts of things. So there's a massive mental health problem in that industry as well. And we sort of saw there was so much in common. So they've joined us and they've been absolutely smashing it out of the park with their fundraising. And it just opens it all up. And I honestly believe there's a tsunami of problems coming from this.
Do you think... In terms of, I feel it anyway, with Barry Ashworth, Dub Pistols and everything, you sometimes, to take your eye off the attention of being in a band and being a product and putting it into another, putting your attention into another thing, it kind of helps the product.
Oh, for sure.
Because you're just not able to, you don't put too much emphasis, you don't stress about it. It's like, well, this is a more important project to be focusing on.
Yeah,
now.
It just helps clear your mind, especially in a time like this where, you know, you have got nothing, you know, being a musician, and we normally travel and tour 11 months of the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, performing live is a massive part of my life. It always has been for the last 35 years.
Shout out to Dave Budgeon, Shimmy T, all the crew. Big shout out. Course.
There you go. So it's been a massive part of my life, and that's all I've ever done is spent my whole life on the road. I don't think I've ever spent so long in one place ever. And like I said, you let that mind wander and it will wander, you know. So giving myself something to focus on outside of music. I've continued to write music, you know. I've had King Youth around and we've been writing together and that, but there's only so much writing I can do. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so I go out for a walk a couple of hours a day, but the winter's coming and that's terrifying me.
Yeah, exactly, because you should be on tour right now.
On tour till Christmas, and then I normally go away for a couple of months and tour the other side of the world where it's nice and sunny and hot.
Yeah, mate, I have been privy to the debauchery of a Dub Pistol. I mean, I know I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm backstage gallivanting and whatnot, but oh my God. I mean, you're a tour de force. It's just like, I don't know how you know, you've always got a drink in your hand, you've always got a grin, you jump on stage, you get sweaty, you come off, you carry on. It's amazing.
Well, that's part, I mean, it was the norm, you know. It was kind of like, that's what, we lived it to the maximum. We always thought that that was what rock and roll was, and it took a long time for us to sort of get our act together, really, and grow up.
Yeah, it's funny how all of a sudden you forget that a lot of these rock and rollers that we're trying to emulate are all, you know, senile or dead.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah.
I mean, part and parcel of the lifestyle, you know. Mm. I mean, like, but like I said, therein comes the problems with mental health as well, because obviously, like, you know, drink, drugs, late nights, performing, up and downs, you know, you know, you're not going to avoid getting some sort of uppers and downers. You're going to get your head sooner or later.
Especially like when you go out and do live shows, like you say, 8 months in a year, 10 more, like a level of PTSD kick, you know, because you're literally doing it every day. It's like being out in the trenches to a an entertainment sense, you know.
People think it's a glamorous lifestyle, and for an hour and a half a day, you know, while you're up on stage, it's showtime. That's fantastic. What people don't see is that, like I say, the early starts. You know, you're up all night, and then you're off early in the morning, and then you'll be hanging around venues all day, sound checking, and you'll just be drinking, and that just becomes the norm.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll be eating badly because you'll be eating in service stations and things like that, and you just pick up really bad habits really quickly. Habits.
That's right. Ginsters, fuck off. There's no more Ginsters.
Greggs.
Greggs. Those weird flapjack takeaway biscuit things, all this stuff. In its right time, though, you know, with every, you know, that's the better side. The bestest side, though, is you have this ecosystem that on a good season, like you say, you go out, you do your gigs, you do your touring, you come back to a nice tranquil. You're outside now. You're outside in
Hertfordshire.
Yeah. How is that for you? How in a normal, you know, year? How has that been? You know,
it's been solitude has been the fact that, you know, I spent most of my time living in West London. I absolutely love my time here. Got loads of amazing friends that I do miss, obviously. But, you know, living out in the countryside, certainly during the pandemic, has been a lifesaver. It means I can go out walking and there's just, you know, there's just animals everywhere and beautiful countryside. And it's been a real, you know, it really helps clear my mind.
When you say miss your friends, though, I mean, I know what you mean. There's a community hub, which...
There was around here for quite a long time.
But that doesn't last, does it? It doesn't... There has to be a breaking point, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess, again, most of the time I was on the road, so... When I say I wasn't just hanging out around here, most of the time I was on tour, and then I'd come back and I'd see my friends. So that was like being on tour.
Yeah, that's right. Just continuation.
But now when I finish touring and the partying stops, I go home and my wife's there, and the countryside's there, and I can shut the door and turn off. Do you know what I mean? I can relax. Whereas before I would just hit, when I was here, it was just, dude, comes trouble.
Yeah. You can imagine, isn't it? Not your normal episode of Cheers. No, say the least.
Definitely is a bit EastEnders. In the West Enders.
But you do get West Enders, but, you know, you are an inspiration in my mind when I think about, like, what you've achieved as a brand. I don't imagine you going home and having a quiet red wine by the fire. It sounds to me like you've got, like, a, you know, there's the merchandise, there's the drinks, there's the, you know, there's all sorts of things that are essentially built for festival upkeep.
Well, it's not just a festival upkeep. I mean, the merch has obviously been a big saver, and thank you to everyone that's continued to support us through this. But obviously, you know, merch is selling music is one of the hardest things now. Making money from selling music is merch, and touring, that becomes a massive part of your income. You know, so you know, I'm one of those people who are always working. Whether or not it's just, you know, whether I'm at home, I'm never going to be switching off. I'm always hustling somewhere or the other. Do you know what I mean? Because let's face it, this industry is a hustle. You've got to be on you know, 24/7.
That's why I kind of bring it up, because I'd like to chat about it a little bit more, just for people out there, because, you know, we're talking about the worst sides of what's going on. But there is an upside. The idea of, like, diversifying as an artist.
Yeah.
Okay, music will never depreciate, but there isn't the money... right now.
Well, that's kind of depreciation, isn't it? I mean, not people are still listening to music, and
that's what I mean.
I don't honestly believe that people would mind paying for music.
I agree.
But the way that it's just done now, i.e. Spotify, is scandalous. Yeah, I mean, obviously, and that's why Bandcamp's coming up more and more, and more artists are choosing to put their music up on there.
That's right.
Because then it's the direct sale.
And they don't want to deal with Spotify.
You don't want to deal with, you know... You have to deal with Spotify, but you're not going to be earning much money. I mean, and the playlists are ridiculous, trying to get on the playlist there. I don't know how many people actually work them, but I don't think it's many.
that shit
conventional radio's changing.
Yeah.
The whole industry's changing. So merchandise and having to look at other revenue streams are essential.
Yeah. When I say depreciation, I mean, like, I would still listen to, you know, I could still listen to a classic Dub Pistols tune now, right? The fact that as an experience, as, you know, and nostalgic, it leans towards, okay, well, so what Dub Pistols do now? And I just find it wicked that there is so much brand content that's involved, and you're still like, you're creating this this environment for the music to become its soundtrack. Do you know
what
I
mean? Absolutely. But like I said, a lot of that is built around our touring schedule, and it's just not there. So while you're not there, apart from doing the streams, like I said, for charity and things like that, then that's what you're doing. You're thinking up new ideas. You're trying to get different products in. Mm. You're trying to do different things. You're trying to look at constantly as well at the moment. Obviously, rescheduling everything is a massive part of your diary.
Yeah, it's just like move the goalposts.
That tour's now moved to that tour. I don't even want to talk to my agent anymore.
Yeah,
you've got a gig, have I? No.
Me, honestly, that, you know, I'd be lying if I said that it was intentional, but there was a natural, organic progression with me and my career where I just felt like, well, beatboxing wise, the gauntlet has to be passed. I can't be doing this thing, and using the model of the best in the world for that, you know, what, for 11, 12 years? I don't think so. It felt like
congratulations.
Natural.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was just
still got it.
Yeah, but it was never going to happen, right? So, you know, and things move on, the industry moves on. And I just was like, you know what, if I'm not getting the gigs, then something has to change, something has to move, and I have to create my own thing.
Make a new vehicle for yourself.
Yeah, you make a new vehicle, and that's what I see you do all the time, to recreate yourself in that way each time, with a new product, with a new thing, with a new festival. Like, your branding is so on point. Like, you...
Thanks, Johnny A.
Johnny A, I'll
Johnny
touch
A.
Johnny A.
Yeah.
Who's Johnny A?
Johnny A. He used to live around here as well, but he's the guy who does all our artwork and art designs. And I mean, there's been a few people over the year, but Johnny A is the man that nails it right at this very moment in time.
He looks good.
He's absolutely top of his game. I shouldn't give out his promo details, really, because otherwise I'll end up losing him for my work.
Yeah, hold that retainer down, Johnny A. But seriously, though, like, you know, Dub Pistols, to me, it embodies that lawlessness. It's that kind of Mexican Western
punk
kind
rock.
Of, yeah, exactly.
Punk rock. It's like, it's do-it-yourself ethos.
Yeah.
Do you
know
what I mean? It's like, you know, I mean, for years I couldn't... early parts of my career had management, and then the industry changed so much there was no 20% to be had. There was only 20% of the blame.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. So I know exactly what you mean.
So it's like, well, there's no point. So for years and years and years, I managed myself, you know, because I couldn't see the benefit that there used to be by having a manager. I'd kind of been around the industry. I'd been up, down, thrown out of it.
How much does that take? Because yes, I agree. You're your best representative. How much energy does that take?
It must take a lot. I mean, but the problem is, even when you're not managing, i.e., you've got a manager, and I've got a manager again now. But even when you're not managing, you're still kind of managing, because you still have to discuss everything with your manager anyway.
It just
worked for me for quite a long period of time. I've had some fantastic managers, Richard Bishop, and in America, who was absolutely incredible. Mm. And then afterwards, I just got to the point where there was a point in my career where I just it didn't benefit me to have a manager. Do you know what I mean? It was, if you're bringing 20% to the table, that's fine. But like I said, all was left was 20% of the blame.
That's a classic. It's a classic chicken and egg, isn't it? Of what a manager is worth is, and if you find the right one that plugs in his
a good manager's
rituals,
worth his weight in gold. But like I said, that's a different thing, you know. Mm. But I went for a period where it just didn't fit me.
Yeah.
And
one.
I think I was unmanageable, I think someone said as well. Oh, that might have been the truth.
But that does come with responsibility, right? I think we all, you know, when you get your back against the wall and you're like, okay, well, there's no manager out there, fine, I will do it myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you have no choice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just hard work, and I think I was hard work for them. So, you know, because don't matter what time I go to bed, I'm up at, God knows when, I'm on it.
I did
Do you know
notice.
What I mean?
Yeah,
I did notice. I'm always up bright and early, and it's like,
give me a day in the life of Barry Ashworth.
Get up at 7:30.
Nice
seven,
time.
Yeah. Get on the hustle till I get out of bed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's it. You know, everybody be in the studio, whether it's on the phone, whether it's on the road, it's just like, you know, anyone on the road, you're still hustling. You're always hustling.
Do you feel something's missing in the day if you ain't doing something?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit of a workaholic, and I can't not do anything. Do you know what I mean? I think I would go crazy, and I just got to be doing something. Otherwise, my mind drifts, and I just naturally do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and in a time like this, where there's a lot of wandering minds, and you know, you must feel pretty lucky that you kind of sat out your stall in a way that at one time or another it was probably too much for you to swallow because it was so much going on. You'd be on the road, and then you'd have an order for like 30 t-shirts at some bloody place, and then do you know what I mean? Now, I guess you're still set up, and you. I guess it's a bit of luck there, isn't there?
I think you create your own luck. You know, you just got to put the work in. Do you know what I mean? It's as simple as that. And whether or not, whether it's like now, when we're in a strange time, you still got to keep your head up, which is the hardest thing, I think, in times like this. You've got to stay productive. You've got to stay positive. And focused, do you know what I mean? Because it's very easy to suddenly slip off that motivation thing where you know to kick back and think, well, there's no point doing anything. You do that, it's like a boxer who's taking a punch and he's on the deck, and if, you know, once you're out, do you know what I mean? It's like, but if you keep getting up and keep fighting, then you're still in with a, you know, hitter's chance.
Too right,
you know
what I mean? Too right. I'm coming to this question because you did make the departure, you moved out of the city. The hustle element to any artist, you know, there's some people that work hard, but then there's working clever, and defining what your hustle is, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the way that I learned to do that was by making every mistake in the book. Do you know what I mean? I had to learn the hard way. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, I call us successfully unsuccessful. Do you know what I mean? And no one has tried to ruin their career as much as I have. Do you know what I mean? It's
sabotage, my own shit. Yeah.
You know, there was, do you know what I mean? We were a liability. My company's called What the Fuck Could Possibly Go Wrong Limited, everything. Do you know what I mean? You know,
love it.
Documentaries, what could fucking possibly go wrong, the history of the Dub Pistols, it's like everything, trust me. I don't sit here like going like I got all the answers or I never made a mistake. I made them all, do you know what I mean?
But I'll keep
trying to look for the answers, you know, and I won't take no for an answer.
See, you just said that about the documentaries and shit, like your marketing of the band is so on point, isn't it? You feed the fans. You really give them.
We just do our thing, though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like we just continually do our thing. And I think the thing with Dub Pistols as well is we have a really good connection to our fan base. They're more like our mates than our I don't like the word fans. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it kind of makes me feel.
Yeah. Because
I'm not that special. Do you know what I mean? But we have a real good loyal fan base, if you want to call it that. That, you know, we'll go out front after every show and meet them, we'll have a drink with everybody. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're not unreachable. Do you know what I mean? And I think people really sort of respect that and feel with, you know, they know we're approachable. And I kind of think that that's where the loyalty comes from.
For sure.
Do you know what I mean?
I think your audience, in the same way as your music, it embodies so many influences of British culture. Like you've got the electronics, you've got the amens and drum and bass, but then you've got the full pub band-esque style ska music, reggae DJ at the start for good measure. It's like, and then the way that there's a fun-loving criminals element to it as well that kicks in, and I think that's in part the persona of the band. But you've got the songs that, the legacy of songs and the fans that get it, it's the whole thing.
I guess we're kind of almost like a 21st Century Specials.
Yes,
or a
21st
Century Clash.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we've incorporated sort of electronic and club element into what is fundamentally sort of ska, reggae, hip-hop, and then we'll just move into drum and bass and, you know, we'll just switch it up. But to me, that's the punk ethos that we started off with, which is like, you know, anything goes. Try it. And I think we've been going long enough now. We got our eighth studio album out on the 16th of October, Addict. And it's we've been around long enough to know that you can't pigeonhole us. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you try and put us in a pigeonhole, and I've always fought against that. Whereas the old punk ethos was, you know, it's anything goes. To me, if you ever tried to be punk, you weren't punk because if you're copying something, you ain't doing it.
That's the problem.
Do you know what I mean? So we can move around different genres now, and people understand that.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're first starting out, everyone wants to put you in a pigeonhole. And if you have one track successful, you've got to make all the rest of the tracks got to sound exactly like that. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? But we're lucky enough to have managed to navigate round that way by just continually doing what we're doing. Not always successfully.
No, I mean, it's all impressive. Like you say, prepare to make mistakes. That's the way it is, you know? You fail without them. There is that. And I guess being in the studio must be pretty interesting for you guys. What no holds barred. You know, these are the parameters.
Yeah, I just whatever we want to make on the day.
Mm.
You know, I'm lucky enough to work with various different vocalists. Tim and Dave are fantastic musicians. I work with different producers. You know, whether it's King Youth, whether it's Billy Burrows, Zero B, or Will Hensel, or Jason O'Brien,
they'll always
bring in different things. Do you know what I mean? Right. So, quite lucky that we're not just one. I'm not one dimensional in our sound.
Do you have a studio in your house?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is a mind chiller. You know, imagine some of the artists ain't got the studios in their houses right now.
But I think technology is such that you can do it on. Yeah. You know, you can make up, you know, a decent production just on a laptop these days. So you can get the basics of writing a good song together quite easy.
So do you get sent the project ideas and then you bounce them to Dave and you bounce them back to the producer?
No, I'll quite often come up with an idea, get a producer, whether it's, like, say, Youth or Billy or whoever. We'll knock up a sort of basic idea and then we'll send it off to Dave or Tim because they're up in Leeds now. And Tim will add some horns or whatever. And just, you know, it's sort of, they'll send it back. And quite often every poet's a thief or, you know, something that I've heard somewhere along the line. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know. And then we'll just start building it. And then I'll bring in guest vocals or whoever and send it off to them. And then we'll get them in and record the songs.
Yeah, that's the other thing. A big shout out to Doghouse Derelicts, right?
Yeah, Dave and Tim.
Yeah, man, all day. I have to say, like, you're really calculative about your guests, and it feels like an event. Each album does feel like an event.
I mean, I'm 8 albums. God knows how many guests we work with, but I'm quite lucky that we've ticked most of the boxes that I want to tick. Do you know what I mean? So from that point, I'm very honoured to have had that.
Eight albums. When we leave this beautiful earth, you've stamped your mark on.
Let's hope there is a beautiful earth left by the time we leave, because Attenborough's about to come back and tell us it's not looking good.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually pretty scared myself. I mean,
COVID's taken the whole global warming thing away from the agenda. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like, but there's those Amazon rainforests and that ice cap still melting.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so once we get through this and Brexit, we've got.
I think it's like a little real mirror being put on ourselves right now.
Oh, man, I tell you,
I'm kind of feeling it.
Emergency on planet Earth.
Yeah. I don't like the chaos. I think anybody that enters into chaos has a serious underlying problem. But to have the mirror facing us and actually taking a look at ourselves and the way that we're
Have no choice.
No choice.
At the moment. I mean, you know, the world is so divided. I find, you know, the internet now, you see more and more people leaving Facebook. You see more, because of the pandemic. But for every, as we spoke before, for every protest, there's a counter-protest. For every statement, there's another statement which nullifies it. It's like you don't know what to believe.
Not to believe.
You can't stick your head above the parapet without being trolled. Do you know what I mean? You know, the council culture and, you know, I believe artists and things. That, you know, there's a lot of people who haven't spoken up during this pandemic, like I said, about the venues and about everybody that's losing their jobs. And I think half the reason that these people aren't speaking out is they're too scared to speak out because they're going to get their head knocked off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like their managers are telling them to stay out of it
because
you can't say right for doing wrong.
And you're very much the opposite. If only there was like other big acts that were turning around, vocalising exactly what's going on and how they feel it, because you need you need a bunch of figureheads coming together.
No, absolutely. I think that's what We Are Viable are looking for, and we make events. They need someone, you know, bigger than myself to come forward and help the movement and help the industry as a whole.
That's right.
So, I mean, when you say I'm not scared of sticking my head above the parapet. No, I'm not. Do you know what I mean? Look, I'm not saying that I don't, but I'm not arrogant enough to think that I'm right about everything either. Do you know what I mean? I listen to other people's point of view, but do I care if someone doesn't agree with me? Not really. If I think they're wrong, if they're right, then I'll listen to them. Do you know what I mean? Or if I'm proved wrong, I'll gladly listen. Do you know what I mean? But someone trolling me, really, get off your keyboard warrior.
Yeah.
You know,
trolls, man. Oh my god. I mean, this is the world we've come to now, you know? It's
insane. Well, everyone's got a platform now, and rightly so. Everyone should have a platform, but oh my god.
Yeah. But when it comes to the ballot box, no one goes and
I think that's the sad thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know, everyone speaks up. But no one really, like you said, and then you put the ballot box and you end up with that buffoon Boris.
We Are Events as well. That needs to be cultivate. Boris and all them lot, they ain't give a fucking shit. There needs to be this needs to cultivate and build.
It's terrifying. Like we said, we've mentioned it, touched on it a few times in this show, and it's not. Like I said, we need some bigger artists to come out and support it. Support the industry, but we also need everyone else from the public to sign the petitions that are going around. I don't know if any of you have seen them. There's quite a few petitions going around.
That's right.
Because if not, it's not just it's not just our lifetime. Your kids are going to have no events to go to.
Yes,
their civil liberties have been taken away. Their civil rights, civil liberties. Yep. I don't know what you call it. They're changing laws by the minute without even consultation
at all. That's right.
And then these are taking away your basic human rights and civil rights, and they're going to have severe consequences further down the line for the next generations.
Yeah.
So, like I said, if you really want your kids to be able to go and see live music, and music is a basic, basic
emotive,
primitive way of expressing yourself and feeling emotions, that's going to be taken away. That's being destroyed right now as we speak.
That's right.
So please, 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 people, step forward, stand up and make your voices heard.
Absolutely.
There you go.
It's a dangerous weapon, is music. It's a dangerous fucking weapon, and
but
they know it.
It's the most basic of like I said, primitive ways of expressing yourself.
Yeah.
And whether it's through joy
or
whether it's through mourning, do you know what I mean? Or whether it's through protest or love.
Yeah.
You know, it's the best way of communicating.
It's fantastic.
All the emotions that you go through. Listening to music,
and watching it. I mean, let's not take away the fact that you take someone's attention in a live environment. You take someone away for 2 or 3 minutes on a song, and they're gone. They're undivided. They're not thinking about anything else. Like that's a very powerful, powerful thing. You know what I mean? And we can't let that go.
We need to fight for our right to party.
That's literally, literally the time is now, people.
Stand up, be counted.
So the new album.
New album, Addict, 8th studio album.
It's here. It will be here. It's here. Yeah.
You can pre-order it. You can go to our website, thepistolsmusic.co.uk. Features Cheshire Cat, Ragga Twins, Horseman, Natty Campbell, Shawnee T, Lindy Layton, Navigator.
Ooh,
I mean, there's
Navi.
Good old Navi.
Hold tight, Navi.
He's killed it on this Dark Days, Dark Times song we've done.
Wow.
That's out on the 16th of October, Sunday Best. Pre-order it now and help us smash the charts for it.
Come on, baby. And again, listening to the lineup on this, it just feels like it's its own world. This is the Dub Pistols family.
I mean, there's a. If you look over the course of 8 years, the Pistolero family is large.
It's large, right?
It's large. There's been a, if you look at the amount of people in the different lineups and the amount of different guests. I mean, it's great when you can get the guests to come and join you, because that obviously makes every show different. Do you know what I mean? When you can have different guests coming in for different shows, and it's always evolving.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing.
Well, very best of luck, my brother. It's been absolutely awesome having you in.
And mate, it's been a pleasure to come back and see you.
Yeah, yeah. Last one was the live one we did, wasn't it?
Hopefully the next one we'll do will be live again.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to see some more people, and we'll be out and we'll be out talking about the life we just had and the laugh we just had at the last festival we played. We'll be back to doing what we do.
Telling you, man. Roll on ASAP. Barry, your staff, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, brother.
Killer Keller podcast, out like in was out of fashion. You stay lucky, all right? Don't forget to share. We're gone. Peace. Good. Yeah.